You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Farming is one of the oldest professions in the world, but today it's also one of the most futuristic. Think about it. What started with hands in the soil is now powered by sensors in the field, satellites in the sky, and algorithms predicting the next harvest before a single seed touches the ground. And tonight we get to explore this new world with someone who lives at the intersection of innovation and agriculture. Clarence Mwale is a pioneer in agritech and agribusiness transformation, working to merge technology, sustainability and profitability for African farmers and agribusiness leaders. He's a respected thought leader in precision agriculture, a trusted advisor to organizations driving food security, and a champion for modernizing farming across the continent. He's here to show us that agriculture is not just surviving the 21st century, all right? It is evolving, it is thriving, and maybe even becoming, can I say this word on a Christian radio station? Sexy. So tonight, whether you are a farmer, a foodie, an investor, or just someone who eats, and that's all of us, lean in, because the future of food starts right here. Clarence, good evening.
Hi, good evening.
How do you do?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm good.
How are you?
Thank you. I'm good too, thank you. Now, I'd love for you, to take us into the field. If we were standing on a farm that uses the latest technologies, what would we see? What would we hear? What would we actually smell that would make us say, this is not my grandfather's farm?
Okay, so I'm going to speak from my experience.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate enough to travel quite a bit around the world. Technology is very different by continents.
Yeah.
There are parts of the world like the United States, they are very mechanized and it's highly technological way of farming.
Mm.
In Europe, it is closer. And then in Africa, there are some countries where it works, it really works.
Mm.
And then there are other countries where technology is a good idea, but it doesn't really work as much as it would or as much as it does in the other continents.
Yeah.
If you understand what I mean. Yeah.
I get you.
So, yes, technology is a good thing. Innovation is a good thing. It's not necessarily that everything that we are farming now is at high technology level everywhere.
Yeah. And from your experience, what separates the countries in Africa or on the continent that are actually capitalizing and getting it right and the countries that aren't? Because I know earlier you mentioned that Zimbabwe isn't as technologically advanced. So what are the differences between those countries? And perhaps what can we do for the countries that aren't so advanced to catch up to those that are?
So the first question is, do we want to catch up?
Do we not?
It's not necessarily essential that you use high technology to farm.
Yeah.
Not for everything.
Mm.
If you look at Zimbabwe, for example, we have our unemployment rate is estimated at about 95%.
Yeah.
You don't want to bring machines where you could employ people, where 90% of your population are unemployed, where graduates are sitting with no employment. However, it also depends on what crops you are doing and what you're using the technology for. In our organization, for example, we grow annual crops in mulch to ensure there's no peas for export. And we also do perennial crop, which is blueberry.
Yes.
For the blueberry world, you want to mechanize as much as possible because you want to minimize the number of times that you handle the product. So you want less handling. And this is where technology would work. Precision farming is more in demand than with the other crops. So it also depends on crops. It depends on what you're farming, what you're targeting. The world is very diverse in the sense that sometimes it's a good marketing tool actually to use people to do the physical work rather than machines.
But one could argue, okay, yeah, continue. I'll bring my argument when you're done.
please bring your argument.
Yeah, so one could argue that it might be a bit of a cop out to say that mechanizing or bringing in technology might disadvantage the unemployment stats, when it could very well be a way to upskill the unemployed and upskill them in a way of them building these machines or getting into these tech savvy industries to be able to not just use those skills in the country, but to also then become marketable and skilled so that they can take that skill to other countries overseas. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you, but you look at, if you want to be practical about it and you want to be realistic about it, can we take a country like, I'm going to use Zimbabwe again. Can we take a country like Zimbabwe to go and compete with the technology of China?
You're stressing me because we're taking the people. And I went to school with folks from Zim. They're the smartest people you could come across.
I agree. We employ 100 women who I still believe until this day that they can grade blueberries better than the machines that I have seen in Spain or in the United Kingdom. And at the end of the line, I would get a better pack out, a better, more precise blueberries at the end of the line than you would get with the machine. Yeah. So, yes, we can get... Your point is right, but being realistic,
sure.
Can we compete in the technology world where there are giants like China, the United States? I mean, in America, you can go to a farm that is 2,000 hectares and there's 5 people working there. Everything else is mechanized.
Clarence, is the point to compete or to leverage what they know and to learn from them in order to bring those skills, or I guess in order to have those advancements in country as well?
The point is to compete because you're competing for a global market. If we do things with no purpose, so the purpose is for us to bring a product to the market that is
above
marketable,
the rest,
that is competitive, So you're coming to the market. Let's say we're all targeting the European market. We're bringing blueberries. And they're blueberries that are coming from America or from South America, from countries that are a little bit more advanced than us. These blueberries have been grown with every technology that you can imagine. And then they're the same blueberries that we are bringing. What is our story? What is the unique African story in that?
Shouldn't that be the focus? Our purpose? What is our story? What is our differentiator?
The African story is that with every berry that we've pegged, it has been grown and pegged and graded with love, with pure hands and love from an African continent, from a country that is in dire need of advancing, of helping its people, or from a continent that is in dire need of bringing its people to the level of the rest of the world, from a continent that has a lot of people that need jobs. We've provided jobs. We've touched people's lives. We've sent thousands and thousands of school children by employing these people directly into the production. So I'm not saying technology is bad. I am not saying that. I am saying that sometimes not having technology is a very sellable, is a very marketable point. It's something that you can take to the market, and a lot of people will relate to it.
I still think you're underselling your people, because I know your people, and I love your people's brains.
so if you know, it's not only about Zimbabwe. It's not only it's about Africa. It's also about the third world. Yes, we use a lot of technology. You need technology to be able to know what is coming in terms of the climate and climate change and weather patterns and all of that. You need technology to be able to test maximum residue levels on time and effectively, because you're dealing with small farmers there, which are a bigger risk. You need a lot of technology. But we're saying realistically, How much technology do you need to tell an African story or to tell a third world story or a developing world story?
Or how you much know? Technology would be good for us versus not?
I prefer the traditional way of doing things. I would use technology where we can, where we cannot use people or where we cannot rely on people's knowledge, where we direly need to use technology. Yeah.
I hear you.
And then where we can use people and touch people's lives directly, let us use people and touch people's lives directly.
Ah, I hear you. Talk to us about precision farming. It sounds very technical to me, but is it really just giving each plant its own personal trainer? Can you break it down for us in a way that clicks for everyday listeners?
So it is exactly the way you say it. So it's giving each plant the nutrition that the nutrients that it needs, with precision, with the right timing, with the right scale, the right rate, and the right time. It can even, you know, with blueberries now, you can even be in your home and set the computer to start irrigating or to start fertigating at what time. And if there's one plant that needs more nitrogen than another plant, this computer will tell you that you need to adjust the nozzle for this particular plant because it's not receiving as much nitrogen as it should as the rest of the field. So precision farming, I'm 100% up for precision farming for specific crops like blueberries that bring in the kind of investment back. Because it's a high value crop. If you put in all the technology, you get paid back for it. You understand? So it is exactly that. It is understanding the crop. It is giving the crop its nutrients directly and not universal in the whole field, directly to each crop. And you're able to measure what each crop is receiving and how each crop is doing in terms of it being healthy or not.
Sure. That sounds like raising a baby.
Farming is actually like raising babies.
It sounds like it.
If you meet farmers, the joy in them to just look at their plants every morning and see them grow is like, I'm a parent myself. It's almost like the joy of watching your children grow. So the disappointment then comes when you grow these plants, you've put your effort and love and emotion into it. And it's a lot of effort and a lot of emotion and a lot of things are involved in farming. Then at the end of the road, you don't find the right market for your product. Where we have a lot of losses. This is where we need more technology in Africa on how we can reduce post-harvest losses.
Oh, man. Yeah. And with our soil being so good and our weather being favorable, it's really a loss. A loss to the world in terms of the product, but a loss to us in terms of revenue as well.
Exactly, And, you know, just the emotional emotional breakdown that farmers go through when things like that happen. So nobody really should go through that. This is where we need the smart people that you're talking about that are in Africa to come up with sustainable ways of reducing losses post-harvest. So 60% of losses in agriculture actually okay post-harvest.
Oh, man.
Raising the crop, the African continent, the world has mastered the art of raising the crop and raising the crop right.
Yes.
When you take the fruit away from the crop, from its mother, it starts dying. And that's where all the losses start occurring. So 60% of losses take place post-harvest. That is where we need technology to fix things.
Sure.
That is using technology effectively.
Yes.
Not replacing people with technology.
But enhancing what they've got going on.
Yes.
I hear you. And I'm just curious. I'm going to ask you this question out of curiosity. Blueberries. What makes blueberries so valuable? Who decided that blueberries were such a tradable commodity all of a sudden?
If you remember 6 years ago, we were in lockdown for how long? For almost a year and a half. Way too long. And out of that experience that the whole world went through, where the whole world stopped, people realized that we've gone on and on for generations and gone about and put bad things in our bodies. We've not looked after ourselves. There was a lot of talk by medical practitioners that the people with underlying
Conditions.
conditions were the ones that were to go first if COVID comes.
And they did.
So, and they did. And so I think it made the world realize that we need to look after ourselves more, better. So people started looking at what are the crops that we can, or what are the foods that we can eat that give us maximum or optimum nutrients, antioxidants, all these things that people are suffering from, hypertension, diabetes, cancer, all these things. What can we do to be healthy? And blueberries are one of the top fruits that give you all the antioxidants and the nutrients that you need to stay healthy. So instead of buying chips for our children, we teach, if we can afford, we should be able to afford because we grow enough blueberries in Africa. We should teach them to eat blueberries instead of asking for chips.
Heesh.
That helps, that then just helps with the immune system, with all the antioxidants and all of that. So by the way, it's not only blueberries. There are a whole lot of other crops that are also like that. Avocados, there's an avocado called a Hass avocado. It's very, it's a small avocado, but it's got a lot of nutrients. It's got enough, just enough natural fat in it, better than butter, better than animal fat, all these things. So that is why blueberries are, we're now living in a world where we're superfoods of superfoods. So blueberries are one of the superfoods that give all the good things to the human body.
And I love them so much. And you know, I'm thinking, as somebody who loves fruit so much, I don't
Yes.
know why I don't have a farm.
You should come to Zimbabwe and farm.
No, honestly, because I live by fruits and vegetables. You can take everything away from me. Those are my things.
Well, we know that in the Garden of Eden, people ate natural
Hallelujah.
foods. Yeah. So,
Hallelujah.
so I mean, it's only natural for us to love fruit and veg.
Yeah, that makes sense. That
Yeah,
makes sense.
we should love fruit and veg. It is what we are meant to eat. Yeah.
Now, from drones to sensors to satellites, how do these tools work together to help farmers make better decisions in real time?
It is gathering all the right information at the right time. So with drones, you can we've got quite a number of farmers that are now even spraying with drones. It seems like it's new technology, but the drone itself is new technology. But aerial spraying has always been there. So in the back in the days, farmers used to spray with aircraft that they used to fly themselves. Now it's just aircraft that they control with the remote control. So it is not really new technology. It's technology that has always been there, that is now enhanced technology, in the sense that the farmer doesn't have to be physically on it, driving it or flying it to spray. So, and if you look at it, for full cover sprays, you need efficient equipment like that. You also want to be able to take aerial view pictures to see what the crop looks like from the top, from the vantage point. So drones are when we can afford, they're a good tool to use. Also depending on what crops you are doing, and what crops you are growing. There are some crops that we grow traditionally just for sustenance. Then it makes no sense to then want to introduce drones into the. We talk so much about commercial farming and what we're going to sell. Sometimes we forget that we need to feed our nations first, you know. And then so we still need to sustain ourselves. Still need food security in a lot of African countries. That's where we should now start having the conversations about genetically modified organisms, which is a very touchy subject to almost everyone, but it is things that we need that maybe we cannot run away from eventually.
And let's go there, right? GMOs, they're quite controversial. So tell us about it. Are they heroes? Are they villains? Or just misunderstood when it comes to Africa's food security future?
I think it is misunderstood, really, because if you look at most African countries, when we talk about food security, we are talking about our ability to produce maize, grain, really, and genetic GMOs or modified genetics can be used to help with drought resistance, with climate change, with high yields. If you look at traditional way of farming maize, almost every country grows maize. If you look at the traditional way of farming, there's been a decline in how much people get per hectare, how many tons or how much yield people get per hectare growing maize. It's because of years and years of using the same seed. It has created disease resistance, it has created inbreeding, it has created a lot of things. So how do you correct that? You start playing around, or you start, let me not say playing around, because this is a very serious matter. You start modifying the genetics to get back to the root, to the original crop, to get better yields, to get more drought resistant, to get better results in a world where the climate has changed, literally. So that is, I myself have no issues, have no problems with modifying genetics of products. A lot of the times, us in our African countries, we talk about GMOs being bad, and then we try to grow maize, and then at the end of the season, we realize we don't have enough to feed our people. Then we go and we approach South American countries, and we import GMOs. So you know, a lot of the times we're importing the GMOs. I know we say that we don't, but a lot of the times we're importing the GMOs where we could just accept and grow the GMOs.
Yeah.
So the people who are knowledgeable enough to tell us that the GMOs are not good for us, surely they should be knowledgeable enough to tell us which part is not good, so we can avoid that part and come up with a solution.
Yes, give us full education.
Yes. You know, we have a lot of people with opinions. Some of them are genuine, learned opinions that we need, but we need to use these opinions and all the education to find a solution rather than to put a stop on something and just end it there.
Yeah.
So I personally have no issues with GMOs. We work with a lot of small-scale farmers. We see them struggling with the same seed that they have used and carried over for generations generations. And you can see that the seed is now tired. It's not producing the way it should. Let us modify the genetics of this seed and keep up with the times.
Sure. That's so interesting. I have a question here on our WhatsApp line, and I guess this is a question that comes from you saying that I should consider coming to Zim to farm. The question is, please ask your guest how easy it is to get land for farming in Zim.
Well, that's a whole conversation. Everywhere you go around the world, Zimbabwe is known for land and land redistribution. But it's not as easy as just coming to Zimbabwe and getting land. All the land in this country belong to the state. So you've got to apply. It's a rigorous application process to be able to get land. We farm here in Zimbabwe. We don't even have land. I don't own land myself.
Yeah.
We have to lease. We're on a lease. So it's not easy to get land in Zimbabwe. I hope that their government ministries or the relevant government ministries are listening. But the reality on the ground is that it's not easy to get land in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, oh, I hear that. And I hope that's sufficient for our guest. Now, I do want us to talk about AI, machine learning, big data. These are buzzwords in absolutely every industry. What do they actually do for a farmer who's trying to feed a continent, and how soon can they see the difference in their yields? Is it something that you're big on, that you're leveraging?
I think it is something that we need, because when you're a farmer and you're growing, and every day you look at your crop, you're scouting, and you look at different pests and diseases, you want to be able to ask someone and get a quick answer so you can solve a problem. If we are able to use technology like artificial intelligence for us to be able to just go in the field, walk around, take a picture of a bug, take a picture of a color of the leaves and upload it, and your artificial intelligence will tell you that you've got a nitrogen deficiency. Oh, look at this. It gives you quicker information rather than waiting for the government
To release.
Or a government agronomist to come and visit you when they're feeling good on that day. You know, so we need artificial intelligence. In our own company, we're trying to work with people that have expertise in this area. Where we're supporting 5,000 small farmers, we need some level or a database with artificial intelligence, where our farmers, before we even wake up, we've got a 24-hour WhatsApp channel. But before we even wake up, we want our farmers to be able to just ask a question and get a quick answer. So I think artificial intelligence, if it is used in the right ways, it is really essential. It's really, really important. And I'm a big fanatic of that.
Oh, love it. Love it. We always hear about Africa being the next food basket of the world. Apart from the conversation we had on GMOs, what is another innovation that, if we adopted it widely, could unlock the potential of us being the next food basket of the world?
You know what? It's not even my way of thinking. Being in this industry every day, it's not even us unlocking new things. It's just us using what we have right now to full capacity. You know, we have, how many African countries do not have access to financing?
Oof.
How much? Look at the number of farmers that are desperate to get financing to produce. Look at the level of governments in supporting their own farmers to produce. Look at the state of our roads in many African countries. How do you transport, or the state of our transport systems? How do you transport the product to the market? You know, even if we are targeting the European market, how many African countries have direct flights from their airports into Europe or into the European Union or the United Kingdom? So if we fix the basic things, we make a huge step already into becoming the fruit basket of the world, because we've got everything. We just are not using. If you look at the African continent, we are probably only using a small percentage of our potential.
Literally.
A small percentage of our potential. And then we look at what can we do to innovate. We don't need to innovate. We just need to raise. You know, yes, we will need to innovate at some point. But right now, we are jumping a stage. We are wanting to innovate where we should just be using our what we have to full capacity.
Clarence, so yes, doomed? Are we doomed? It's not looking good. It's not looking good.
We need, I don't know, because we only come to this earth once, yeah?
Yeah.
We have not lived in the past, so we don't know the things that happened in the past. We don't know what will happen in the future. But what we know is what is happening today, and we know that we are not using the resources that we have at full capacity. This is our biggest problem as Africa. So we concentrate on other things. We fight between ourselves. You hear stories about the black Africans fighting the white Africans over a small piece of land when there's another huge piece of land that is sitting there and no one is fighting for it. You know. So why can't we just all get together to help each other, use the resources to maximum capacity? Black or white or whatever color or brown that you are, as long as you are African, we are all Africans. We use our resources to the maximum capacity, and we help each other. And we start producing. I promise you, right now, with the small percentage that we use, we're a significant producer in the world. We export everything that we grow and we pack, we export to the EU and UK. And we're not even doing, we're just a small company working with smaller companies. We're not even doing everything that we should, because we don't have the capacity. We don't have the finance. We don't have the right support. We are having to scrounge around to do the business. And you can imagine there are so many businesses that are going through the same thing. Scrunching around for finance, scrunching around for technology, scrunching around to understand what is the latest devices that we can use. And then at the end of the day, we only manage a small percentage. And with that small percentage, we're still managing to export. But imagine if we worked with full capacity or with 90% of our capacity, we would get there. So we're not doomed. I don't know. I don't want to say we're doomed. I'm a very positive person, but we're not doing enough.
We're not doing enough. Would you say you guys are operating at the highest capacity you can right now?
No. It's a straight no. We can do so much more. We can do so much better.
And what will it take for your particular circumstance?
For our particular circumstance, we can do so much better. We can do so much more. We get calls every day from people in it. This is where sometimes you feel proud of being African, where someone in Botswana is watching and seeing what you're doing, whether on social media or wherever, and they give you a call and they say, hey, we like what you're doing. Can you come and do the same thing in Botswana? Can we do the same thing with us in South Africa? Can you help us set up the same thing?
Yeah.
This kind of mentality is the only way that we can all grow. So we're not nearly where we should be. We could do so much better in our own little company. We could do so much better in our own country.
Yeah.
And we could do so much better as a continent.
I hear you. For the young entrepreneur who's listening right now, what are the untapped opportunities in agri-tech? Where would you tell them to focus if they want to build wealth and make an impact?
Artificial intelligence, logistics, just getting the product to the market. You need to come up with innovative ways. Use whatever technology that you can.
Yeah.
Let's get the product to the market at the right time. Post-harvest, we don't have enough affordable technology for post-harvest in Africa. I could go on. There's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
You know, I could go on. There's so much, so many areas that we don't see. So, by the way, when you are in a farming business, you are not only supporting people that are interested in farming. When you run farming operations or production operations the right way, you can employ accountants, you can employ marketers, you can employ doctors, you can employ psychologists. It can be a whole industry based on agriculture. So when we look at agriculture, let's not look only at going into the field and farming the land out into the soil and farming the land ourselves. It's about creating an industry, that industry that then brings all these other disciplines together, all these other professionals. You know, so there's so much to do. There's so much. We just need to think outside the box. We need to think at farming or think about farming as is a massive industry that has so much potential to grow.
And on you that know, note, as we close, right, paint us a picture. If we get this right, Clarence, if tech, farmers, investors, policymakers, and all those in other industries all come together, what does agriculture look like in 2035? And what's on our plate that might surprise us?
I have listened to some of the world's richest people who come from Africa. They say the next generation of billionaires are going to come from Africa and from agriculture.
Sure.
That tells you the story.
Yeah.
When you are a rich technology or mobile company giant sitting in New York and you're looking at Africa from there, and you think, wow, Africa has so much potential in agriculture. It can bring in so many billionaires from that industry. That tells you the story. So what should we target? We should target for food security. We should target for market competitiveness. We should bring our products in a big way to the continents that do not produce. We should flood those continents with African products. One person should walk into a supermarket and find it difficult to decide whether they should buy South African peas or Zimbabwean peas or Ethiopian peas. We should make it difficult for the market to choose what is better between these African countries. Everything is so good and so vast. We have that potential. We just don't know how to reach it. We just haven't done enough to reach it.
Ah, that's breaking my heart.
It breaks my heart every day. but it is a reality. You should be able to visit any country in Europe.
Yeah.
Two days ago, Zimbabwe has just signed a protocol with China to produce blueberries or to export blueberries directly into China. I've been to Shanghai. Mm. In Shanghai, it's an upper class economy.
Yeah.
Almost rich people live in Shanghai.
Mm.
And this city has 33 million people.
Mm.
So it's 33 million people that can afford to buy blueberries.
Yes.
And Zimbabwe is 16 million people. How many South Africa? 60 million?
16, about 17. Yeah.
You know, so we you look at that and you look at there's 1.4 billion people in China.
Mm.
There are 1.4 billion people in India. These countries do not produce the products that we can produce out of Zimbabwe or out of Africa or out of Southern Africa.
Mm.
Let's produce and feed them. Feed 1.4 billion people.
Mm.
Imagine what that could do to our economies.
Mm-hmm.
And you know the best part?
Yeah.
People need to eat, so people always eat.
always. Yeah.
So it's not like a diamond ring where you buy one diamond ring forever and it gets passed on to your children and your grandchildren.
Mm.
You need to eat every day, three times a day, even some people even more. So if you farm and you produce the right products, you are always going to be in business because people are always going to need to eat.
And the interesting or nice thing is that because you're producing natural, good food, they live longer. So they'll be your customer for their lifetime value is very high.
Yes. That's the idea, to make them live longer with our blueberries. So they can buy for a longer period.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there anything perhaps that I did not ask you that, because of your expertise, you believe is very essential for this conversation?
I think, yes, let's talk about technology.
Mm.
Let's talk about modifying genetics. Mm. Let's talk about all the new things that are coming and we incorporate them in our way of farming.
Mm.
But most importantly, let us invest in our young people to get interested in farming.
Yeah.
Where we buy designer clothes, let's buy khaki clothes and farmer's shoes and go to the farms and farm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we are taught in school, we are taught to do the smart jobs or what we think are the smart jobs. We need to teach our young people to look at production. Look at careers in livestock farming, careers in crop farming, careers in a lot of different ways, a lot of different things to do in the farming industries, in the farming world.
Mm.
Even if you're not interested in that directly, think about being an accountant for a farming business or for a producing business. Or think about being a lawyer for a farming business and standing for the farmers' rights or for the farm workers' rights. Let's think about that. Let's start thinking or teaching our young people that farming is a business.
Mm.
Farming is a career. Mm. We need to start teaching people that farming is a career. It's not something that you do when you retire or when you're old.
Yes.
Or when you have no option. You should. The way we train to be accountants or lawyers our whole lives, the targets that we set for ourselves, the goals that we set for ourselves, let's do that from young ages. Set targets, train our whole lives to become farmers, to become producers. That is my big message. A lot of people only come to farming because everything else has failed. It shouldn't be like that.
Oh, that's so good. You know what? I think for me, the value of the conversation, or from the very beginning, it was very valuable, but you really opened our eyes to the fact that agriculture isn't a thing of the past. It's a gateway to the future. I mean, if you have billionaires or the richest people talking about how this is literally the new diamond or the new gold, then it's something worthy of our consideration. And what I also loved about the conversation is that you took us beyond the soil, beyond the spreadsheets, and you showed us a vision where technology and tradition work hand in hand to feed not just Africa, but the world. All those numbers in the Asian countries, that is our markets. They don't do what we do, and we can give them what they can't give themselves. And so I hope that everyone who is a farmer, who's an aspiring farmer, who's listening, was given a reason to innovate. And if there's a policymaker out there, that this conversation gave them a reason to act. And I guess for everyone who's just a regular listener, that they now have a reason to care about what happens on the farm, because what happens on the farm affects our bodies and our minds and potentially how long we have to live in those bodies and to operate those minds. So thank you for this conversation.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
I did too. Cheers. Have a lovely evening.
Cheers. Thank you.
Bye, Clarence.
Bye.
Sure. I hope that we all leave this conversation with a fresh curiosity about where our food comes from. And then we have the courage to support the future of farming that we so brilliantly, that Clarence rather so brilliantly champions. Yeah. And with that, hey, look at us finishing ahead of schedule. I am Nompumele Lombonane, and I hope that you have just made sense of your agricultural business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.